Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Farewell to the Welfare State, right after this. You know, Joe Smith started the day early, having set his alarm clock made in Japan for 6 a.m. And while his coffee pot made in Japan is perking, he puts his blow dryer made in Taiwan to work and then shaves with his electric razor, which is made in Hong Kong. He then puts on a dress shirt made in Taiwan, his designer jeans made in Singapore, and a pair of tennis shoes made in Korea. After cooking up some breakfast in his new electric skillet made in the Philippines, he sits down to figure out on his calculator made in Mexico how much he can spend today. After setting his watch made in Switzerland to the radio made in Hong Kong, he goes out and gets in his car made in Germany and goes looking, as he has now for many months, for a good-paying American job. After the end of another discouraging and fruitless day, Joe decides to relax for a while, so he puts on a pair of sandals made in Brazil, pours himself a glass of wine made in France, and turns on his TV made in Japan, and ponders again why it is that he cannot find a good-paying American job. Well, instead of a good-paying American job, why doesn't Joe look for a good-paying American private business dealing in property instead of dealing in income? Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, click on to the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, we're talking about this thing of the privateer. Privateer. He's got an article this month, and he said, Farewell to the Welfare State. The welfare state's been with us for about 75 years here in the United States. It's going to continue. You can rest assured that the welfare state and the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto are not going to be abolished, but they're going to be altered. They're going to be changed. And the welfare state, as we've known it, is in its death throes. It's on its way out. And a new welfare state, a tyranny, a tyrannical welfare state, is going to take its place. That's what always happens in the past. And any reason to believe that it isn't going to happen again right now in the future. It's going to be a tragedy, and it isn't going to be just here, it's going to be around the world. But we're in the beginning stages of it right now, so we might as well take a look at these beginning stages and then start making plans for the future, start thinking for yourself. Now, I mentioned to you when we closed last time that the Chinese communists, the Chinese on the mainland now, had a bond issue, and they couldn't sell all of their bonds. Now, that has an outcome. That hasn't happened here in the United States so far. Every time the United States government sticks its bonds up for sale, people come in and buy them, mainly from overseas now, but people are coming in and buy them. But in China, they put two bond issues out, and both bond issues failed to sell the bonds that were being offered. Now, that's important. That's very important. Red alert, two Chinese bond auctions failed. That's the headline on page 7. Third stage deflation has now hit China. Through several past issues, the privateer has developed its global deflation thesis. In this thesis, the beginning of third stage deflation is identified when a government auction of its debt paper fails to find sufficient buyers. And now this has happened in China. This past week, China has failed to attract enough buyers in a government debt sale. And it isn't once, it's twice. Now, there are minuscule sums of money involved here, but the principles are enormous. The Chinese Ministry of Finance managed to sell 25 billion won. Now, that's about $3.7 billion in bills of the 35 billion won that it had to offer. So they were offering 35 and they sold 25, so they had 10 billion sitting on the table. Now, the difference was left on the table, finding no buyers. China's government also failed to complete a major bond sale on July 8th, and that for the first time in almost 6 years. So it's not unprecedented, but it's certainly a shocker. Now, what does that mean when governments offer their bonds and there are no buyers? And what will that mean here in the United States when the Treasury, trying to raise $2 trillion this year, puts bonds out there on the table and the Germans and the Taiwanese and the Japanese and Chinese do not buy all of those bonds? What kind of a signal is that going to send? Now, for most of us, we're not out here buying these treasury bills anyway, so it doesn't make any difference to us one way or the other. But when it happens, it's going to be impacting upon you and me and everybody else, whether we like it or not. Now, when governments cannot borrow, here's what happens. These are early global signs. The fact that China, the world's economic powerhouse, should be placed in the position where it could not find enough willing buyers for its debt paper should send a cold flash of naked fear down the spines of governments and treasurers around the world. If the door is being shut in their faces for more increases in government debt issuance, they then lose the ability to use budget deficits to stimulate their economies. So we want to repeat, these are as yet early signs, but what lies ahead is even worse. What is coming in the future is a time when a government stands before the dire necessity of having to roll over a part of its older outstanding debt, and again, finding insufficient buyers. Now, when that point is reached, a government placed in that financial position has only two choices. It can increase interest rates to the level where it will or where it does attract willing buyers. That would trigger a global competition with other governments, which also want to follow. Now, failing that, it can send its debt over to its central bank and then have it printed. And that's called direct monetization. All right, now let me put this out to you as simply as I can. You and I are workers and producers. And let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, that you and I, a couple of farmers, we're out here working and producing. And so we produce a can of honey, 60 pounds. And we take that honey out into the marketplace, and then we sell it in the marketplace, and let's say that we're getting $1 a pound, we get $60 for it. Now, the government comes along, and they say to us that we should pay our fair share for national defense and all the good things that occur in life, and that the government should take, oh, let's say 40% of what we create and produce in taxes. So the government comes along, and they take 40% of our 60 pounds. Let's see how much that is. That's 12, 24, 36, 48, 60. Okay? So the government comes in and says, we're going to take 24 pounds of your honey, and we're going to feed our troops in Afghanistan, and we're going to do this, that, and another thing. Okay? That's called taxation. That's fine, because the troops in Afghanistan have to be fed and taken care of. We need to pay our fair share. The government took 40%, but they left us 60. So we have 36 pounds of honey that we can eat, that we can do with. And if 36 pounds ain't enough, we can get busy and build another beehive. And next year, when the government comes in and takes 40%, we'll have two cans of honey. And then the government will take 48 pounds of our 120 pounds, and we'll have 72 pounds left. So we'll have twice as much honey. Now, over time, this is what the working class, this is what the producers in society do. When the government is taking more and more in taxes, those producers go out and work harder and produce more and more so that they have enough to satisfy their needs. So back in the 1950s, my dad, working by himself, could support his family. Today, it takes dad and mom to support the family. See what's happened? We had to produce twice as much. Now, the response that government has made, and I reported on this last week, is that the government intends to spend more money. That while the rest of us over here are taking it in the shorts, the government isn't laying off any of its employees. They're not taking any pay cuts. Instead, the government employees are still staying on the job, and in the face of lower and lower taxes, tax revenues are coming in, but they're 20% less than they were last year. So instead of cutting 20% of the size of government, no, they're not doing that. They're offering these bond issues. So let's take our honey and let's reduce that to dollars. At $1 a pound, the government comes in, takes $24, and leaves us with $36. So we go out and we work twice as hard, we make twice as much honey, and the government takes $48 and leaves us with $72. Okay, whether you take it in honey or you take it in dollars, it works out to be the same. But now the government comes along and says, we got to have a national health care program, and that's going to cost more, so we're going to have to tax you more. So the government's going to take something more than 24 pounds. Maybe they're going to take 30. Then they've got this global warming program, and that's going to take more money. So now instead of taking 30 pounds of honey, they're going to take 36. So the government's going to take 36 and leave us with 24. Now, under ordinary circumstances, we would go out and work twice as hard, and we would pay probably more than twice as much tax. You know, they like to use that progressive income tax feature. You produce twice as much, but we don't charge you twice, we charge you three or four times more in tax, the heavy progressive income tax. There's nothing progressive about it. It's pretty damn regressive if you want to know what the true state of affairs is. But as we relate this, we are now engaged in the biggest tax increase in the history of the United States with the global warming tax that just passed the House. We got two wars working simultaneously. California's going broke. 47 other states are unable to balance their budgets. It's one degree or another. And are they going to cut spending? Not a dime. They're going to increase spending. And what happens when they consume all of the surplus money, all the savings of the world? They will then monetize the debt, which means we're just going to go print it up and go out into the marketplace and start spending it. And when government does that, they take the services and the goods out of the passing stream of goods and services, and the government consumes those and leaves us with less, which shrinks our standard of living. Bottom line, all of us are going to take it in the shorts, and our standard of living is going to take a hit. It isn't how much in the way of a surplus you had left over last year. What's going to happen in the future is the less and less surplus that you have is going to be taxed more and more in the years to come, which is going to leave you with even less and less and less, until at some point you either revolt, revolution, or you just simply get tired of it and say, I'm not going to produce anymore, which is where the American dairymen are today. They're just closing out and say, I'm not going to milk cows. Now, I have my own cows, so when they quit producing milk in California, it doesn't affect me directly because I've got my own milk production. But do you have your own milk production? Because if you don't, then you'll have to stand in line and share the shortage. That's what's coming, is standing in line to share the shortage. That's what the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto have produced everywhere they've been used. From ancient times in ancient Babylon to the most modern of times, such as World War II, when we had rationing here in the United States. When there's a shortage, we stand in line, and all of us share the shortage equally. Well, not quite. You see, the farmers who produce the milk, they don't stand in line to share the milk ration. They've already got plenty of milk. Meat, milk, butter, and eggs. So the farmers then won't be short of food, but the industrial workers will. The people that are on welfare and food stamps will. The people that are living in the cities and have to get their ration cards from the government in order to share that shortage and do it equally, all of those people are going to share that shortage. Now, when governments can't borrow anymore, then they have to print the money. That causes inflation. Now, in its past analysis, the privateer has repeatedly pointed out that ever since the global financial crisis took off, central banks have lowered interest rates to historic lows. In the process of doing this, they have trapped themselves. Without any room to lower interest rates further, from here on, official interest rates can only go up. Western treasuries, especially in the U.S. and Great Britain, are in a position where their present huge budget deficits are not hugely costly to carry because of their historic record low interest rates. But that becomes another fiscal and economic story altogether if and when interest rates start to climb. So if they cannot borrow the interest payments when they become due, they must either raise taxes or to print more money to cover those interest rates. Now, globally, there is no government watched by the privateer, which is not in this position. Some are worse off and some relatively better off, but all of them are in the position where, in the end, they depend on the ability to raise revenue through taxes. With this ability contracting at high speeds around the world due to the global recession, governments are losing their means of sustenance. Now, that happened in Argentina back in 2001 or two. They were put on COD, couldn't pay their bills. They had a balance of payments deficit. 62% is where the unemployment rate finally peaked out. Wages dropped precipitously because unemployed people are knocking on the doors of those stores and businesses which are still operating. So if you're making $10 an hour and I'm unemployed, I come over to your boss and I say, I will work for $8 an hour. So your boss fires you and hires me. Now you're unemployed. So you come over and you say, well, I'll work for $6 an hour. So the boss cans me and hires you. But notice that wages have now dropped by 40%. See what's happening here? This downward pressure on wages, coupled with governments that are unable to borrow, unable to collect in taxes, monetize their debt in order to pay off those debts. All right, now what's going to happen? What's the outcome from the government's monetization program? Well, for openers, it's really great because the lender gets paid. But as the lender goes back out into the marketplace and spends those payments, he inadvertently bids up the prices of the goods and services that are out there in the community. So the ultimate end then is inflation. And this inflation, this bidding up the prices on the one side, and then the deflationary pressure, which comes from the other side, lack of demand. And the government over here trying to balance the two. Historically, it's always failed. You can't get something more than is already there. And that's what we're trying to do here. We are trying to actually make it appear that there's more than is really there by printing more money. Well, listen, think about it. If money is the answer to all of our problems, then why doesn't President Obama simply go to Congress and say, look, we need to eliminate poverty in America? And my proposal to eliminate poverty is to go to the Bureau of Engraving and Printing and print up $1 million in $100 bills for every man, woman, and child in America. And let's make every man, woman, and child in America a millionaire. So we'll print up 300 million batches of $1 million bills. How's that for a plan? Then we'll go out and distribute all of this money to everybody in America so that everybody that went to bed last night woke up this morning with a shroud over a pile of money, $1 million, and you come into the post office and pick up your $1 million in cash. What would be the outcome of that? Well, instantaneously, millionaires don't go to work on the assembly lines. So my first guess would be that the majority of the people out here who have just gotten their $1 million are going to fail to show up for work, but they won't fail to show up at Battlefield Mall. So they walk into the mall and they start buying. They start buying new cars. They buy new television sets. They go on a buying splurge. They just go out and buy, buy, buy. All right? Boy, that's going to stimulate business. And that's the whole gist of it, stimulate business. All right, so now everybody's gone out to their Mercedes dealer. The Mercedes dealer now has sold out all of his Mercedes automobiles. So he calls the factory and he says, oh my God, I had 10 Mercedes automobiles sitting here on my lot and I've sold them all. I need you to send me another 10, 20, or 30 Mercedes automobiles to sell. So the company ships you the 10 new cars to sell. And sure enough, as fast as they come in, you sell them and out they go. So there's a transfer going on here. $100 bills are coming into your pocket and automobiles are leaving and going into the garages of all of these people out here who have all of this money, this $1 million each that they're all out here busily spending. Now, here's the problem. Everybody is spending and consuming, but nobody is producing. I mean, how can you be producing anything when you're at Battlefield Mall buying? And that's the crux of what's coming down. It's the idea or the belief that we can stimulate the economy by simply printing more money and putting it out there in circulation. It works longer, and it's not as fast as if you just wrote up everybody a check for $1 million, but it's just as insidious, and it's just as absolute. The ultimate end here is that the people will not produce, but they will go out and spend and consume. And as they spend and consume, they use up the available supplies, which are then not put back as fast as or as readily as in the past. So the outcome from that is shortages. Shortages begin to develop in the marketplace. That's what happens under communism, socialism. There's a shortage. That's why socialized medicine always fails. The final analysis, it always fails because the people can collect more in the way of benefits than they have to contribute in the amount of payments. So they soon use it all up. And that's what's happening here in America. We have already used up all of the stuff. Now it's time to pay and we don't have the money. Now, in its last analysis, the privateer has repeatedly pointed out that ever since the global financial crisis took off, central banks have lowered interest rates to historic lows, and in the process of doing this, they have trapped themselves. If they cannot borrow the interest payments which they become due, or when they become due, then they must either raise taxes or print to cover. Now, globally, there is no government watched by the privateer which is not in this condition or position. Some are worse off and some relatively better placed, but all of them are in the position where, in the end, they depend upon their ability to raise enough through taxes. And though this ability contracting, or with this ability contracting at high speed around the world due to the global recession, then governments are losing their means of subsistence. Now, as the recession grows deeper, more and more people are laid off, which means they have less and less money to spend. At the same time, government is increasing the money supply through its stimulus program. They're not laying off any government workers because they want those government workers to be the vehicle to take the stimulus money and to put it out into circulation. And every time a dollar is spent, it circulates four or five times in the community. Well, picture it. I go into Steak and Ale, then I order dinner. Now the bill is $40, and so I'm going to give a $4 tip to the waitress, and the waitress takes the $4 tip, and she goes into the 7-Eleven store and she buys a package of Marlboro cigarettes. She's happy. She's got smoke. I'm happy. I had a good meal. Now, the 7-Eleven store has the $4 that they then turn around and pay to the clerk in wages, who in turn goes out and spends that on a haircut. The barber in turn takes that $4 and he goes out and spends it on something. And this money circulates around in the community. And this is, after all, the desired effect of having all of this stimulus money. It's to get people to cutting each other's hair and buying stuff down here at the grocery store, taking it home, consuming it. But what happens when you print all this money, there has to be a commensurate production of goods. For every dollar that is put out into circulation, there has to be another pound of honey put out there on the shelf. Because if you're putting out money without corresponding real goods and services on the shelf, then you're inflating the money supply, and that's what's been going on over the past 20 months. There's been this god-awful, horrendous inflation in the money supply, which has not hit the marketplace yet. But it's going to. And when it does, things are going to change, and they're going to change dramatically. Now, the people of America just went through an election here in November of 2008, and they wanted change. And boy, are they going to get it, which we'll talk more of when we come back. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now, once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing issue number 633 of The Privateer. We were just talking here before the break about printing the money up, because that's precisely what government's doing. Now, they're not giving us $1 million ahead. They're not going that far. Because everybody can figure out, everybody can see that if you wanted to spend your way to happiness and success, you'd want to give everybody $1 million. But that of and by itself is self-destructive. It would destroy the economy. It would destroy the very people that you're trying to benefit. So we would have millions of millionaires with all of this money floating around and nothing to buy. Now, those are shortages, and that's where we're heading. We're heading in a piecemeal fashion to the same conclusion. Because as we print more and more of this money, then more and more of this money becomes cheaper and cheaper. Now, if we take a look at the dollar index, a couple of years ago, the dollar was up to 120. That is, the dollar compared to a euro was worth $1.20. Now it's totally reversed. Now the euro is worth about $1.35 or $1.40, and the dollar is worth about 80 cents. Now, what do you think of that? So the value of these fiat currencies are dependent upon, well, how much of this fiat currency is out there in circulation. This 29 trillion dollars worth of stimulus that's been paid out to companies like AIG and General Motors and Chrysler is ultimately going to be spent and find its way through the economy until it bids up prices to 2, 4, or 8 times what they are today. So when I say that the price of cherries, which started at $3 this season and went down to 2, may start next season at 4 and go up to 8. And if they don't, then it'll be the year after or the year after that. Now, we don't know exactly when, but we do know that it takes about 18 months for this money to worm its way through the society, through the economy, until ultimately that's the net result. That's called inflation. Now, what do you and I do to protect ourselves from that inflation? We'll talk about that a little bit as we progress along. Now, again, there is nothing to tax when the serfs go broke. Now, boys and girls, you and I are serfs. We call ourselves employees or self-employed, but in its past analysis, the privateer has repeatedly pointed out that ever since the global financial crisis took off, central banks have lowered interest rates to historic lows. In the process of doing this, they have trapped themselves. Without any room to lower interest rates any further, from here on, official rates can only go up. And Western treasuries, especially in the United States and Great Britain, are in a position where their present huge budget deficits are not hugely costly to carry because of their historic record low interest rates. But that becomes another fiscal and economic story altogether if and when interest rates start to climb. Now, if they cannot borrow the interest payments when they become due, they must either raise taxes or print to cover. So what we're seeing here is a combination of both. We have the biggest tax increase in the history of the nation, right on the doorstep. It's coming. That's the global warming tax increase. So they can either raise taxes or they can print to cover. Well, they have to borrow $2 trillion a year anyway. So there's only $1 trillion of it out there being saved every year. So what we're going to have to do to make up the shortfall is to simply print and cover. That is, print and pay. So if Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, wants to pay his bills, what he needs are real, honest-to-good $100 bills that come out of the federal government. Now, I suspect that that's probably what they're going to do, is to print the money and give it to California, because you cannot allow California to go broke. Not only is it unprecedented, it's also a position from which there will probably be no recovery. I suspect that the feds will let California out to the end of their rope, and then when there's no place for California to go, the feds will step in and say, sign here, and here's the terms and conditions. And you Californians, if you think you've got tyranny now, you ain't seen nothing yet. Because now you're going to have the federal government in there telling you how to live your lives. Not just the state, which is bad enough, but you'll have both. Now, when the serfs go broke, those of us that are already unemployed aren't paying any taxes. So the taxes then are devolving upon those who are still out here in the marketplace, who are still tending their bees and producing their honey. But if, like the dairymen of California, and this disease spreads through the beekeepers, and it spreads through the plumbers, carpenters, and electricians, and the general contractors, and the shopkeepers, and everybody else, then we will all close our doors and stop producing altogether. And that's when disaster overtakes us. Boys and girls, we all have to be working and producing. The beekeepers have to be producing the honey. They have to be pollinating the crops. The dairymen have to be milking the cows and putting the milk in the dairy case. And the Walmart workers have to be there stocking the shelves. Everybody has to have a job. Everybody's got to be doing something that makes the economy sing, makes the economy flourish. But once this downturn takes hold, and once the money, which is of no value, collapses, which it inevitably will do, because that's inevitably what it's always done in the past. And only the most ignorant would say, well, I have high hopes that the president's going to be able to bail out the economy. Hell, even the president doesn't have hopes that he can do that. Everybody in the know knows we're just borrowing time. And I'm not saying that's necessarily bad. Maybe if we had a little bit more time, we could press forward and we could help our own individual selves. I'm going to talk about how to do that here in a little bit, but maybe we could go out here and do something that would benefit our families, benefit ourselves. Because no matter what you do, you're not going to save California. It's already gone. You're not going to save the United States. It's already upside down. I don't think you're going to save Iceland or Ireland. They're already too far gone. Now, the realism that comes from these underground newsletters, I call them underground, they're actually right out there in front of you, but nobody knows about them, is the stark contrast between what we hear on the mainstream media and what we hear from the underground press. I mean, this is right up in your face. Now, again, because it bears repeating, until And unless the current cost of government is cut at least in half and all taxes lowered, there is no economic solution in sight. The present tax base is contracting as fast as the world economy is contracting, and meanwhile, government indebtedness is exploding skywards. Worldwide, the welfare state is now dying, and the welfare state advocated and overseen by politicians all over the world is the foundation upon which governments have chosen to stand to be elected. So it follows that with the death of the welfare state, so dies both their foundation and their legitimacy. Now, when this welfare state system collapses, or when it crashes and burns, there will be a new bureaucracy that will take its place. This is called the New World Order. This New World Order you'll find in Revelation 6, 17, and 18. There's a lot said about this New World Order. In chapter 13 of Revelation, we won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without having this mark, whatever this mark of the beast is, whether it's your business number or social security number or birth certificate. Many people have different ideas as to what the mark of the beast is, but whatever it is, you can't buy, sell, or trade without it. Everybody's going to want one. Now, the Creator says if he catches you with one, he's going to exact it from you. And the welfare state says that if you don't have one, then you're going to starve to death because you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade. So that tells us another important part of the program. Number one, we should want to avoid the mark of the beast like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And at the same time, we need to be in a position where we can support ourselves without buying, selling, and trading in the mainstream marketplace. So that's where that's at. Now, inside the European Union, looking for an exit from the stimulus, Germany is rolling forward to a national election this coming September. From August, Germany will be turned inwards politically. Nonetheless, in the weeks leading up to the recent G7 summit in Italy, it was Germany which led the chorus of European nations asserting that an exit strategy had to be put in place now so that current stimulus in the form of budget deficits could be scaled back and ended as early as possible. This was vehemently opposed by the United States and Great Britain at the G8 summit. Nothing much should be expected in this direction until after the September German national elections. But after September, we can clearly expect that the European Union will lead the international parade of nations cutting back on their deficit spending. This is important because it will open a political as well as a financial gap between the nations which run massive budget deficits and those which do not. So, global price deflation update. Consumer price deflation in Ireland has reached 5.4%. It's the highest since the Great Depression of the 1930s. China's consumer prices dropped 1.4% in May from a year earlier after falling 1.5% in April, according to the Chinese Statistics Bureau. Now, Japan's central bank said on Friday, July the 10th, that wholesale prices fell 6.6% in June from a year earlier. Now, this is the biggest fall on record and the latest sign that price deflation is returning to Japan. Other examples abound. The general global outlook is for falling prices, which is the inevitable effect of the deflation which has already taken place. Eurostat has said prices at Eurozone factory gates logged their biggest annual fall in May, pointing to continued negative inflation in coming months. Producer prices fell 5.8% annually, which was the biggest yearly drop since the data series started in 1982. In Germany, unemployment remained at 7.7%. Now, industrial output is falling at an annual rate of 4.9% in the UK, 8.4% in Japan, and 6.9% in Germany, 2.5% in the United States. In the United States case, the data comes from the huge falls of late last year, after which a decelerating fall in U.S. output could be expected. Everybody is now waiting for the stimulus to kick in. Now, President Obama was on the air last night, and he said that we needed to give this stimulus program a chance, that it's only been out there for less than 2 months, and that it's going to take about 2 years for it to kick in. So when it kicks in 2 years from now, when we start having these price increases and inflation, the 2012 election will probably be turning on inflation rather than deflation. At least that's how the politicians figure on spending the money. They don't want to spend the money right now. See, they're already in power. They don't need your vote. But late next year, they'll need your vote, and so they need all of these jobs, jobs, jobs that they can create out here cooking. And they're going to do that. They're going to do that. They're going to borrow and spend and borrow and spend. This process takes years to unfold. The last Great Depression that started in October of 1929 took 3.5 years to reach bottom, and then after it reached bottom in 1933, it stayed on the bottom until 1937, and then it started to wind its way out ever so slowly. Until finally, by Pearl Harbor, we could say, okay, depression's over. Now, governments have an agenda. Their agenda includes getting reelected. So the stimulus money is going to be spent at just the most opportune times to aid the election process in 2010 and 2012. Politicians are not in the business of spending the money, the stimulus money, to take the pressure off of you today. They're in the business of taking the money and spending it at the most convenient time to get themselves reelected, to make you feel the best about it. Now, a late U.S. economic update, the Fed's flow of funds report released on July 11th shows that U.S. household wealth declined by $1.3 trillion in the first quarter of 2009. That extends the biggest slump on record as home and stock prices drop. Okay? So it declined $1.3 trillion in the first quarter. The U.S. economy shed another 467,000 jobs in June as the unemployment rate edged up to 9.5%. Now, the savings rate among Americans rose in May to 6.9%. That's the highest since back in December of 1993, so says the U.S. Commerce Department. Borrowings by U.S. consumers fell in May for the fourth straight month after the unemployment rate reached the highest in more than 25 years. So you can see what's happening here. Our economy is stimulated, or it's moved by about 70% of it is consumer spending. And all of a sudden, consumer spending has dropped off a cliff, and now we've got about 75% of that going on. Just about 75% of consumer spending is still cooking. 25% has been lost. Now, the Baltic Dry Index slumped 4.1% in London on July the 3rd. That completes a second straight weekly loss amid mounting concern that demand for commodities in China are going to slow. The index has now tumbled 18% in the past month. In global terms, this shows that the world recession is accelerating downwards again. Well, this Baltic Dry Index is the measurement of containers on ships and how much in the way of oil is being transported in these ships. The merchant marine of the world is sitting at anchor in various ports. Nobody is shipping jack squat. So that's number one. Number two, the revenue on these ships has dropped by 90%+. These ships are operating at a break-even or a loss. Now, how long are they going to do that? You know, there's a limit to how far they're going to go. Now, there's the European Union report. Now, there's an Australian report for all of you Aussies down there. Page 9 is the Australian report. Remember, this is the Privateer. Privateer is published twice a month, 25 issues a year, by William A.M. Buckler at P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. Privateer is also online. It's www.the-privateer.com. Their email is capt@the-privateer.com. CAPT with the at symbol, the-privateer.com. Don't forget that hyphen between the and the privateer. And their phone number is 617-5471-1960. Once more, that's area code 617-5471-1960. I think if you were to send them an email and say, send me a copy number 633, let me read that and see what the hell's going on in the world, I think you'll do it. Here's the Australian report. He says the enormous global economic contraction is now hitting the Aussie economy. The fact that this is happening after a delay of nearly a year is because Australia is a global resource producer, and most of our global contracts for the delivery of resources are long-term. But time on these contracts is now up. The Australian Bureau of Statistics said exports plunged 5% in May, while imports sunk 4%. This is trailing data from nearly 2 months ago. Data is always trailing when dealing with long-term contracts, and we're now in mid-July, and the international economy has not improved. Australia can expect a further contraction of its exports and imports for at least the rest of this year and a widening global trade deficit. In fact, trade fell to Australian $556 million deficit in May, and there is going to be more to come. Keep in mind, there's only 20 million Australians. Securities? What securities? The last 12 months on the Aussie stock market have been traumatic. The losses bring to mind the old saw that no sooner have you bought some securities when you really start to worry. The losses already incurred will have a huge, though invisible, effect on the Aussie economy for many years ahead. The Australian stock market and its had its fifth worst financial year performance in history over the fiscal year ending on June 30th, losing $350 billion of shareholders' wealth in the year. The end result was the biggest fall in 27 years for the All Ords, trailing only the stock market wipeouts of 1981, 51, and 73, and the Great Depression, of course, of 1929. Economically, one cannot take a $350 billion hit from the wealth of millions of individuals without it having a profound effect upon these same individuals in their actions in the economy and markets at large. One consequence will be that there will be fewer new real physical investments made. Balance sheets will have to be repaired on a broad front, and that will lead to less spending on consumer goods and an increase in monetary savings. Australian households have now lost 36% of their financial wealth since the economic crisis began, and financial wealth per household as measured by the Australian Financial Accounts has slid from $159,000 to $98,000, its lowest point for more than 3 years, and per person it has slipped from $58,000 to $36,000, and this means an economic slowdown as increased savings flow towards balance sheet repairs. Total credit in Australia slowed to an annual rate of credit growth of 3.9%, its weakest since October of 1993. Aussies are pulling their belts in hard compared to their previous borrowing rate. Now, the latest figures show negative consumer price inflation in 14 countries. In Ireland, consumer prices are collapsing at a rate of greater than 5% a year. In the U.S., they're falling at 1% annually, their biggest drop in 59 years. Near-desperate markets worldwide are trying to find new clearing levels for their goods, in the process lowering consumer prices in stages. No real consumer price bottom has been seen yet. We haven't seen the bottom yet. We're in this 20 months. There's another 18 months to go before we get to the bottom, and that's assuming that it follows the 1929 model, which we don't know if it's going to do that, do it. All right, I'm about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.